than a year after my Uncle Silas died and was laid under the sycamores in the churchyard overlooking the river, I walked through the fields one afternoon to look for the last time at the little house by the pine spinney where he had lived for 70 years. It was soft autumn weather, the sunlight as mellow and still as Silas's cowslip wine. As I went up the lane to the house, I looked for the old sign of things. But it was very quiet, oddly silent everywhere. I could hear nothing. And then, coming to the garden gate, I saw that the gate and the fence had been neatly repaired and painted white. The effect was curiously sepulchral, but it did not trouble me. It was only when I saw, beyond the fence, the stump of a sawn-down apple tree, and then another, and then another of a cherry tree, and beyond that a wide, empty space where the gooseberry trees had been, and beyond that another white fence in place of the old, wild elderberry hedge, that I began to grow perturbed, and finally angry. And for some minutes I stood there, on the grass outside, helpless, staring at the white fences, the empty garden, the sawn-off tree trunks, the newly white-painted windows, until suddenly I could bear it no longer. I opened the gate and slammed it shut again and walked up the path to the front door. It was shut and painted white. The saintly effect of that repeated whiteness was too much. I hammered on the door with my stick, and then, waiting there, furious, I saw something else. The old, sweet, pink and white double roses that had grown on either side of the door for countless years had been sawn down, too. The anger went out of me at once, and there I stood, my whole spirit flat. Then the door opened, and instantly my anger rose up again. A young woman had opened the door. She, too, was dressed in white. Her face was white, too, a pasty, tan white. She was knitting. She carried the white wool and the white bone needles in her hands. She looked newly married. And seeing me standing there, angry-faced with the stick, she looked frightened. "Ah, good afternoon," I said. I spoke nicely, sweetly, as though I wanted to sell her an insurance policy or a sewing machine. "Good afternoon." "I was wondering," I said, "if you'd allow me to take some notes about the house and garden. They have historic associations." She looked more scared than ever. Then I said, "I am a reporter. I represent the Nenwell Telegraph." The change in her was wonderful. She softened at once. She put the white knitting in the pocket of her white overall, but still a little of her fear remained.
"My husband isn't in," she said.
"I have 3 children, I told her. The remark finished it all. For one moment she seemed to waver in doubt, and then I said, "It would make a nice little article. We might want a picture to go with it." I was saved again. She could see herself in the paper, the highest of all honours.
"I'm afraid I can't tell you much. We've only just come to live here. We're only just married."
"Just so." I took out an old envelope and scribbled on it, "White bridal veil." "When did you first occupy the house, Mrs....
Mrs. Wade Brown, early this summer."
"Uh-huh. And who lived here before that?"
"Oh, an awful old man. Well, I didn't know him, but the place was in an awful state. Seeds hung up in paper bags all over the bedroom ceilings. Rotten apples on the bedroom floors. And there was no bathroom. We had to have a bathroom put in."
"You had to have a bathroom put in," I said, and I wrote on the envelope, "White bath."
"He was a terrible old man who lived here."
"I know," I said.
"Did you know him?"
"Everybody knew him. He was famous, notorious."
"We found hundreds of empty bottles in the cellar. He must have done nothing else but drink."
"He didn't," I said. "He drank himself to death." She was speechless. "It was the cellar I wanted to see," I said. "It is the cellar which is historic." She hesitated.
"In what way historic?"
she asked. "A man hid there," I said, "a sort of conspirator, a long time ago." I was not lying now, it was true. My great-uncle Silas had hidden there, with the police of half the county looking for him. Though that is another story. And finally, she led me into the house. Stepping over the threshold, I breathed in at once, instinctively, to catch the smells of old tea and earth and wine and geraniums, all the warm, rich odours of my Uncle Silas's long existence there. But the air was dead, stale, with the odours of new French-polished furniture and wool rugs and oilcloth. The woman saw me looking at it.
"It's very different from when we found it," she said.
"Very different."
"Oh, you must mind the stairs down to the cellar. They're very dark. We never use it."
"Perhaps I'd better go first," I said. "I could light a match for you."
"No, no, I'll get a candle."
While she was looking for the candle in the back kitchen, I slipped down the stairs. Then at the bottom, turning and looking up again, I saw the woman's face above the unlighted candle. She looked scared again. She came timidly down the dark stairs, and I took the candle at the bottom and struck a match and lighted it. We were in the cellar, and suddenly I breathed. It was like the breath of another world. The wine, dampness, the musty odour of ferment and dust and spider webs.
"Was it in here he hid?"
she said. "In here." And then I saw something. Bottles. Dark, dust-covered bottles. 6 or 7 of them, standing in the darkest corner. "Bottles," I said. I tried to be casual, indifferent, as though bottles could mean nothing to me.
"Oh, where? I thought the cellar was empty."
I put the candle on the stone floor and took up one of the bottles. It was full. I held it in my hand for a moment in suspense. Then I took out the cork and sniffed. It was wine. Elderberry. I did not know what to do with myself. I was smelling the wine again when the woman said,
"What is it?"
Vinegar, I said. Then I took up another bottle, and another, and another. "They're all vinegar," I said. Then suddenly I saw a bottle of light glass. I could see the wine in the candlelight glowing with the lovely translucent cowslip light I knew so well.
"What's that?"
she said. I smelled. The old delicate flower aroma of the wine was wonderful. "Harness oil," I said.
"The old man left them, that awful old man."
I looked at the bottles in mock perplexity. "They're dangerous," I said.
"How dangerous?"
"Oh, they may burst, blow up. You'd better get rid of them." I picked up the candle. "If you get a sack, we'll put them in it and I'll dump them in the ditch when I go."
"Would you?"
5 minutes later, we came up the cellar steps again, she carrying the candle and I with the sack of wine on my back.
"Outside," she kept saying. "Outside. Whatever you do, put them outside."
I laid the sack tenderly on the earth outside the door.
"It's very good of you. Have you taken all the notes you want?"
"I should like to see the garden." We walked together down the garden path. A neat, parsimonious little lawn had been laid down in the place where the loveliest of all lilies had grown. I could not bear it. We walked back up the path in silence. It was not until we reached the house that she spoke at all.
"I am sorry you've had that trouble," she said.
She spoke as if I'd done her a great service.
"I should be glad to be rid of the awful things."
"I'm sure you will."
"My husband is a teetotaler."
She paused.
"Have you got your notes?"
"I've got my notes." We stood in silence for a moment, awkwardly, and I began to screw up the neck of the sack in readiness to swing it over my shoulder. And then she remembered something.
"Oh, once before," she said, "someone else came and wanted to look round the house."
"Yes?"
"A woman," she said. "She said she wanted to look at the place again for the last time."
For some reason, I could find nothing to say, and I stood in silence while she told me of how, on a day in summer, a woman, It could only have been my Uncle Silas's housekeeper, walked into the garden and stood there like someone stupefied, not saying much except to repeat at intervals that she wanted the old bath.
"I should like the old bath as a keepsake to do me washing in."
The young woman didn't understand her, and then the old woman stood there in the garden and began to cry, still saying she wanted the old bath, until finally, as the young woman herself said to me,
I had to send her away because I could see she was either drunk or wrong in the head.
I picked up the sack and slung it on my shoulder. Well, I shan't want to carry it far.
It's good of you to carry it at all.
A moment later, I thanked her and said good afternoon and opened the white garden gate and began to walk down the lane with the sack filled with the bottles on my shoulder. At the foot of the lane, I turned back. She was still standing there at the white gate, watching me, as though she was still thinking about me. I was thinking, too, but not of her, or the changed house, or the desolated garden, or the heavy wine bottles clanking in the sack, or even of my Uncle Silas himself. I was thinking instead of that tart and irascible housekeeper, a flint-hearted, iron-corseted woman, a Tartar, a sour old tyrant, standing there in the summer garden, all broken up and stupefied, weeping her heart out for something nobody would ever understand.